It's time for Lunch Hour Reviews.
What?
He was licking me!
Lunch Hour Reviews.
Man, I ate till he burst.
You eating Jadis!
Speeding time. I'm Mindy.
And I'm Darren.
And we are the Rance Macabre, covering all things horror.
With a new episode every Macabre Monday, we explore the genre with sharp focus and deep production.
We want you to love scary movies as much as we do, so we don't overshare plots or give spoilers. Hey, everybody, welcome back. This is a Lunch Hour Review, something kind of short and sweet here.
Yeah. Up front, I do want to say this episode is brought to you by our Patreon supporters. Thank you very much to the great Betty Toxic, Michael Hunt, Dave Allen, Josh Myers, Scott, Craig. You can find us on patreon.com where you get, in addition to the regular weekly shows, you get a couple monthly bonus pieces here and there. Sometimes it's full episodes, sometimes it's commentaries, sketches, music, it varies, but it's always going to be there and waiting for you at patreon.com/rantsmacabre. Now, let's get into it.
All right. So I've been sick, so I've obviously been watching a lot of movies.
Yeah.
I've been going crazy with series. I'm still on the leftover train.
Yeah, I'm now 5 episodes in.
And you don't like it.
I'm not loving it, no.
I was obsessed with it.
I kind of feel like it's a series of worst-case scenarios for white people.
Fair enough.
It's not a very diverse cast, so that's just kind of how it falls.
It's true, yeah. They move to another location and in the second season, so then there does become a little bit more...
a more mixed town.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I like it. I recognize that the writing is good. The story arcs are well crafted, but they're generally bummer stories. They're interesting explorations of like where the culture could go after it kind of bottoms out.
Yeah.
And so that I think is like an interesting territory to explore, but I don't know how entertained I am.
I'm like so hooked on it, and now I'm finally caught up, so I have to wait every week for the next one.
Oh, third season playing now, yeah.
Really annoying.
Yeah. I also, it's funny with the reality, I mean, of the show, the idea that the Rapture took, what, 2%
of the people?
2% of the people. So you get your head around that. You're now in this sort of alternate reality where, Justin Theroux can't drink that much beer and maintain 6-pack abs. I'm sorry, that just doesn't work that way. So suspending disbelief, I'm having some problems.
He's very fit. Just last episode, he took off his shirt again.
I will say he's a very good actor. I'm regularly impressed.
Like, where has he been?
He's done some writing here and there. I just know this randomly that he did writing on Iron Man 2.
Oh, random. Like, I thought he was a comedian. I didn't know anything about him except that he was with Jennifer Aniston.
You just thought he was an abs model.
He always had his shirt on when I saw him in pictures with her. So I just was like, oh, he must be a comedian or something. He's like some funny guy. She's funny. He's funny.
He spent the first half of his career just doing crunches.
Well, it paid off. I was going crazy on HBO, so I've watched a lot of HBO.
Yeah.
And the first one that I want to really talk about right off the HBO brand new, 2017's Mommy, Dead and Dearest.
Looking at the open ocean now, and it's beautiful.
Gypsy was in a wheelchair. She had leukemia, and she was having seizures, and she had to be tube fed.
And then gradually, that story fell apart.
Things are not always as they appear.
How do you kill your own mother?
This is a tragic event surrounded by mystery and public deception.
People thought of us as the sweetest mother, daughter, best people in the world.
Now, I had been introduced to the idea of Dee Dee Blanchard and Gypsy Rose Blanchard on a 2020 or one of those 60 Minutes kind of shows. And I had first heard about this and I thought, this is batshit crazy. And so I was so excited to see the documentary when it came out.
Yeah, I had heard the story on, I think, 2 different true crime podcasts. The one specifically that I remember is My Favorite Murder with Karen Kilgareth and Georgia Hardstark. They generally cover stuff pretty comprehensively. However, the territory of the mother was not so well explored. And I think, the documentary kind of goes through the due diligence of like meeting probably, well, certainly not everyone she ever wronged, but they really talk to a number of people in her background and flesh out the picture of the mother.
Like, this is something that's always happened with the mom, that this mom surrounds herself in trouble.
Yeah, I think if you were looking at, like, someone's first half of their life, you could kind of go, like, maybe it's just, like, a run of bad luck. But no, like, a pattern of behavior emerges, and this woman was monstrous. So how do we talk about this without spoiling?
Oh, gosh. Let's get in kind of to the premise. First of all, this is directed by Erin Lee Carr, and I think she does a brilliant job fleshing out kind of both sides of the story, seeing the mom's perspective, seeing the daughter's perspective.
Yeah.
I had seen it on the 2020. It was presented very much as a true crime case.
Okay.
And so it was really talking about the victim. For the most part.
Yeah, yeah. I think those were the early takes.
Yeah, you kind of used the word victim in many different ways in this.
Yes, it's a fluid definition throughout this series. I found fascinating that the Gypsy Rose is available for interviews, and so you get from the horse's mouth.
Right.
At this point, like, a lot of time has passed since those events, and so, you're filling in the story.
It's not that much time. The heart of this is this crime that took place in June of 2015.
Oh, I thought it was back in the... Oh, okay. I thought it was further back, but wow.
Yeah. So let's talk about it. Can't spoil too much, but I mean, it's true crime, so it's hard to talk about
available
it, right?
To be looked up.
Basically, what we have here is a case of Munchausen by proxy.
Yeah.
And not just any case, like one of the worst cases that I think you have heard about, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Munchausen by proxy, it comes up every once in a while. Like if someone is poisoned, certainly if it's like within the family, a story might emerge where like someone was being slowly poisoned over a year span or something to that effect, where you've got this family who typically it's a person subjecting someone to this, but they are sort of glorying in the attention and the, you know, in this case, often the praise of like, what a great mom you are, like what good care you take of your daughter.
Exactly.
And so people kind of like fawn over you and you become this sort of minor celebrity. In this case, like she was having a house built for her by Habitat for Humanity.
Habitat for Humanity. They were going on some vacations for Make-A-Wish Foundation. Yeah. I mean, these people, well, this mother in particular, knew how to work the system.
Yeah.
And what you come to find out is the daughter is none the wiser to any of this that's going on. And she thinks she has all these ailments as well.
Yeah.
And that's terrifying.
I was just as much in the dark as everybody else. The only thing I knew is that I could walk. As for everything else, you know, the leukemia, the epilepsy, I was taking medication that she said was cancer medicine. She would shave my head and say, well, it's going to fall out anyway, so let's just keep it nice and neat. I just went on blind faith that a mother knows best.
For Gypsy Rose, there are so many factors going into her judgment. Her life experience was, I mean, like the kind of stuff, like you wouldn't wish that upon anybody, enemy or not. Like it just, it was a really tough go. So much so that like she didn't have context for just how bad things were for her.
Right. Her mother had said, this is, you have all these ailments. And she goes, oh, I don't know any better. Sure. That must be the case. Yeah. And you really find out what happens. This is not to go crazy, right? I love Disney princesses. I think that's great. I love Ariel. That's my princess, obviously. But if you're only exposed to Disney films, you have a very skewed reality of love and people interaction.
Not unlike those like kept princesses.
Yeah.
She was very much always like, I mean, they talk about it specifically that, it wasn't uncommon that whether there was need to or not, her mother's hand would be on her hand or her shoulder. There would always be like a physical dominance at play. Maybe not obvious to anybody, you know, well, before the fact. Mm-hmm. But now, like people kind of recognize, and Gypsy talked about it specifically, that her mother, if she pinched her, it was her cue to shut up.
Right.
It was her cue to stop engaging and just, you know, sit back and let the mom speak for her. And so like Gypsy, over the course of her life, like, she doesn't have a good sense of like actual truth. Or, you know, right. or what's
she
going on
to understands manipulation,
her.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
And it's a scary, crazy story that as you're watching the documentary, it gets crazier and crazier.
Yeah.
Like I said, I had been exposed to this story before, but that idea of the victim keeps shifting throughout the entire film. And I think Aaron Lee Carr does this great job of presenting it and unfolding the story in this way.
Yeah, and because it is such a modern story, we do have like everything from local channel news reports to like surveillance footage. There's the interrogation footage at the police department. There are, you know, tons of family photos. Right. There's tons of family videos. It was the modern age where people, you know, the mom is living online, and therein is actually the one place where Gypsy does get exposure to the outside world. There was a factor that occurred to me watching it that Gypsy Rose, you know, if you went by her mother, she had any number of birthdays because her mother would lie about her daughter's age.
Right.
So her only exposure to the world was like after hours online, social media, browsing and looking around and
which
sort
of totally in secret.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that said, I expected when we, you know, there are images in the previews, I knew that she was going to be on camera. She was going to be part of this documentary, sharing her side. And so I came into it with expectations of like, what is a very sheltered, very controlled kid sound like as an adult? And she was far more mature and far more self-aware than I ever would have expected, right, considering the life she led up to that point. But it seemed like her intellectual curiosity got her out there. And so she was a lot wiser than I expected her to be.
She was. And what was really interesting, and you and I have talked before about sometimes people with the baby voice.
Yeah.
And we have certain preconceived notions that we think about that. So she starts in the videos when she's sick in the beginning, she's got that baby voice.
Effective
and then
voice, yeah.
When you speak to her now, it's a more mature sounding voice even. It's like two different people that you're seeing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she would probably agree with the point that like she was acting. She spent the first half of her life, more than first half, you know, playing this part.
Yeah.
And like the psychological trauma in that is pretty shocking.
I'm interested to see the future for her. I would love to see different aspects of how therapy is working with her.
Yeah.
Because what do you do when you have someone who only understands manipulation? And it's not through any really fault of hers. That's the only way she knows, that's the only tactic she knows for dealing with people. And that's kind of terrifying. It's like that is making a psychopath.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. If you had to design one from scratch, that would, that you would take your cues from there. I thought one of the most telling and sort of closing out the arc point, like the sort of culmination of some of these conversations is, when she talks about where she finds herself present day, that being jail, prison,
right,
that it is a better place than where she spent her childhood.
Because anything is better than that.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, for a kid who was like out and about, it's still jarring to hear that she would take prison over living with her mother. And yeah, I mean, I guess that actually speaks to a lot of people's experiences. We just don't come upon them very often. It's
right.
Not, you know, it's pretty rare that like, you know, a hero's story arrives them in jail and they're like, ah, finally, I can relax.
That
and
tells
just be
you
myself.
Just how bad it is. And
yeah.
And it's great the way that it is kind of like unfolding. My first thing, though, is just like, who names your kid Gypsy Rose? Like, you know, the musical Gypsy, you know exactly what that mom is thinking. If she names her kids Gypsy Rose, you know exactly where that mom is coming from. And all I could think was that I thought you did it for me, mama, because it's the story of Gypsy. What is going on? There's Mama Rose and then Gypsy Rose. It's very telling.
All right, miss. But just one thing I want to know. All the pushing and working and finagling, all the scrimping and the scheming and lying awake nights figuring. How do we get from one town to the next? How do we all eat on a buck? How do I make an act out of nothing? What did I do it for? You said I fought all my life. I fought all your life. So now tell me, what did I do it for?
I thought you did it for me, Mama.
Okay, the movie I'm very fresh on is 2008's The Children.
Now this is heaven.
World. Now. They will take you out.
I think they're really sick.
Oh my God, I love you both so much.
The Children.
I first caught wind of this because the girls in the back row did a show entirely on this, so you should check that out. Their episode was, I think it was back in December. I think it was around Christmas time, and this is like a wintry story. So, directed by Tom Shankland, who directed an episode of The Leftovers.
Uh-huh.
He also did Luke Cage, Iron Fist. Don't hold that against him. He's actually very good. He also did some episodes of House of Cards. So he's kind of transitioned to doing more television directing. It's written by Shankland and Paul Allen Williams, writer and director in his own right. Here's a brief synopsis. A relaxing Christmas vacation turns into a terrifying fight for survival as the children begin to turn on their parents. That's a bare bones explanation. It's two families coming together. Even those families are mixed families. They are sort of in the remote woods. It's an all English cast. It takes place in England, and it's great.
Really?
I was really satisfied. Yeah,
I see. Yeah, it's one of those ghost house films which can go either way. Dangerously either way.
So it does feel very indie. It's kind of very apparent that like it's all digitally shot, and it kind of, you know, it does feel like that low budget aesthetic. Uh-huh. That said, like the cinematography is actually very good. The coloring is very good as far as making the most of the medium. It's a good looking movie.
Yeah.
One of the running themes as far as like mixing children is the subtext of like vaxxers and anti-vaxxers. And so it's subtle, but it's there.
Okay.
For the most part, there are elements where early on, a lot of the scenes are just the kids being kids.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that this is a horror movie, you're kind of looking at it with a little bit of a skew and sort of like judging behavior and stuff like that. But you got to remember, like, kids are just random. Like, they indulge in the moment and they just kind of do whatever makes them happy. It might not make any sense to an outside viewer.
Sure, sure.
And then you add to that sort of sinister intentions and you're always kind of like, well, what was that? That kid looked at him funny. Like,
right.
Moments like that start to build. And, you know, I'm an uncle to 16 nieces and nephews. And so I'm sure you're familiar with, like, the sort of group dynamic. When a kid gets upset or starts crying, there sort of comes on this, like, mass hysteria amongst kids. Like one
yes,
kid can sour
can
the mood of a
group. They can rile each other up pretty
right.
quickly. It's a frenzy, practically.
And that plays into this as far as the group dynamic. And, you know, as far as kids go, you typically don't look at that with skepticism or suspicion.
Mm-hmm.
But when every once in a while, like a little bit of like a plan becomes apparent, then it starts to get creepy. And the idea that these kids' behavior isn't as random as it first appears.
Oh,
this
God.
Chaos isn't pure. It's there's an agenda. And so when things start escalating, it kind of happens in bits and pieces. It's a little bit of a slow burn. But by the time we're like full gun running, it's great. Like it's
yeah.
creepy and like it's pushing some boundaries. It's pretty fucked up at times, and I dug it. I really
nice.
Really liked it. There's one element that just whatever. It's a minor pet peeve there's a compound fracture in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that move is so overdone as far as like the gore I get.
Because it's gross. It's an easy like ick factor. Remember when everyone was ripping their fingernails off?
Yes.
For a while? It was the same thing. They're like, first everyone was getting hit by cars because that was a great effect.
Yeah, yeah.
And then everyone started getting their nails ripped off.
You're like dragged away. And
yeah, that was like
nails.
Always a thing. And now yeah. It's compound fractures.
It happens a lot. I think I get the impulse to like, just as far as your story, you want to debilitate a character and like having a assumed break isn't really visually dynamic
right.
as far as like, you know,
make
if they're
gross.
Wearing sleeves and long pants. But in this case, like you've got protruding bone mm-hmm. through skin, that's compelling, but it's becoming overused. And frankly, it's not very realistic. Like compound fractures aren't that common.
Well, the movies tell me they happen all the time.
It does feel that way. Yeah. So the gore and violence is there in this movie that's, you know, more than half of the cast is children. So you can
really?
Put that together for yourself as far as like who the damage is being done to. There are a number of great elements of the movie that I really dug.
Where are the children? Where are my babies? Where are my children?
I think they ran into the woods.
Oh, God.
No.
Oh,
stay.
Okay.
I'll find them. I'll get them. They're just in the woods.
I want my baby.
There's so much to like about this movie. I highly recommend it. I watched it on also HBO Go.
Oh, then I have to check it out.
Yeah.
That's why I was like, where do I find this film?
It's readily available on your streaming box of choice.
So I watched one that I was kind of excited by, and let me tell you, it was actually beautiful, but at the end of the day, I wouldn't recommend it. It was Dig Two Graves in 2014.
Sure.
It's not easy losing somebody you love. Wish I could tell you there's some kind of magical answer, but there isn't any.
Hello, child. You lack magic, right, Jake?
How do you know my name?
We can bring your brother back to life, but somebody has to take his place. Should we shake on it?
What are you doing with this?
Anyone can tell you that it's not meant to last, and the city's burning under. It's running from the past. This is how.
No cowards, there aren't no heroes. There's only the living and the dead.
Directed by Hunter Adams, written also by Hunter Adams. It's a pretty looking film, beautiful film. Originally, it deals with flashback and then the modern day, which the modern day is like 1978. So it's got this really pretty feel to it. It's very autumn-y. It's very outdoorsy. Filmed in southern Illinois. So there's rocks and it's beautiful, beautiful like scenery. And then there's the story and the story is just... It was so like you wanted something so much more and it was not there.
Oh, bummer.
And it really was a bummer because it stars Ted Levine who, you know, from...
Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah. And so you're expecting like all this great stuff. And let me tell you, he does a great job.
Yeah.
He's playing the grandfather. So he's got all this old age makeup also on. And that's kind of irritating because you see him in the 40s as a younger man. And now he's grandpa in the 70s. I'll read you the IMDb synopsis. A girl's obsession with her brother's disappearance leads her on a nightmarish journey through a small town's gothic landscape where she is faced with a deadly proposition. How far will she go to save the people she loves? Firstly, it's not a brother's disappearance. He dies. I mean,
that's not a spoiler.
No, he dies in the beginning. It's not a mystery of where did he go? fell into a quarry and died. The end.
Oh, okay.
And then there's this sort of like the flashback, flash forward is important. And it's almost like presented like it's a twist, but there's no twist at all. Like they feed you everything. It's almost like The Happening. It's the plants, or maybe it's not the plants. I don't know.
And also, never mind what I said.
Right now, maybe it's not. I don't know. And there's also this like undercurrent of like, you know, that I don't really like it. Like gypsy magic.
Oh, really?
So there's a little bit of that where I just can't abide by that kind of behavior. But yeah. So I was really disappointed because for a beautiful film and it sets a beautiful mood. And yeah, Ted Levine's doing a great job. I was so disappointed. I had hoped for so much more.
It's probably nothing alike, but it sounds like my reaction to Black Coat's Daughter as far as like aesthetically pretty,
yeah,
haunting. You know, you've got moments of greatness, but it doesn't really hold together as a story.
Yeah, I think it's, I would put it a little bit below Black Coat's Daughter because I really, Black Coat's Daughter, I didn't like either. So I don't know. I guess it's both. I just didn't love it. I wanted so much to like it though.
Yeah,
it because it was like that really great feel. You know, the whole thing, the mood of the film is just there. And then that's it.
That's a bummer because usually that's the high hurdle for like smaller indie movies is sort of getting the most out of an aesthetic on a pretty small budget. And so it sounds like they nailed that. It just came down to the story and the script that really wasn't the best.
Well, I'll tell you, it was the same cinematographer who did Synchronicity, 30 Days of Night, the sequel. But still, it's got a great look, though, to it. You know what I'm saying? So you expect kind of that kind of feel, like a good feel in the cinematography. And that was there, but that was about it.
Mm.
So I would say skip it. If you should want to see it for some reason, it's on Netflix.
Sounds like you could watch it on mute pretty effectively.
It's beautiful looking, yeah. You go, oh, I like some of the costuming because it's 70s without being too 70s.
Yeah.
You know. So like I was saying about being sick, nothing else to do but watch movies. Okay. So I watched Dig Two Graves first, and then it's part of the double feature. I wanted something that was just like silly after that.
Yeah.
I thought it would be silly.
At first glance, sure.
It seems silly. I watched 2014's Clown, and you know what? I freaking loved it.
There's Daddy. He's gonna miss the clown.
There's a little bit of a goof up.
There's no clown coming.
Who double books a clown?
I thought you had a backup.
Everything's gonna be fine.
You're perfect.
Physically cannot get it off. It's suffocating.
One, two.
Daddy?
Oh, Jack, sweetie, let's get you to bed.
That's not Dad.
I can feel myself changing.
What happened to my husband?
It's not a costume.
Lured people out of the villages into its cave.
His white face and red nose to entertain. If only they knew.
No matter what I say, don't let me out.
I want to see my number one birthday boy.
It was really good.
Right?
It was so much better than a movie called Clown about a guy who gets stuck in a costume should be.
I mean, I was really expecting something silly, and I got treated to some awesome storytelling. Good acting.
Yeah.
Good special effects. There was, though, Compound Fracture.
Yes.
But I kind of enjoyed it when it happened, because fuck that guy.
So, directed by John Watts, written by Christopher Ford and Watts, it was originally a short film. I think it came to the attention of Eli Roth.
Yeah, John Watts is such a smart director.
So smart.
He'd made this fake trailer about 5 or 6 years ago that just popped up online. And this is kind of pre-social media, like back in the MySpace days. And I got this, it said directed by Eli Roth. And I got like all these emails and phone calls. People were like, your new movie looks awesome. And I've looked at this fake trailer that he had done, sort of like my grind, after kind of like my grind.
Yeah, like Thanksgiving that we still want.
Well, we'll get to that in a minute. But with Clown. And so I tracked him down and I called him and I said, do you want to turn this into a movie? And he said, first of all, thank you for not suing me. And I said, well, this is Hollywood. Let's wait until the movie's a hit before we sue each other.
Yeah,
then we can sue each other the rest of our lives. Let's make the movie. I said, do you actually have an idea for this? And John and his co-writer, Chris Ford, who had written a movie called Frank and Robot, they had an idea. They're like, we actually thought this could be a feature film. And so I said, let's do it. And we got this company, Vertebra Films, to put up the money. We did it for, I mean, probably just over $1 million. But we spent about half a year or a year writing the script. And the big thing was cracking the mythology. We said, this mythology has to be airtight. And John didn't want to make a slasher movie. He really wanted to make a movie like The Fly, something that's like a very disturbing character transformation piece where... And the genius thing they came up with was that it's the suit that's evil. And that when you put this thing on it, you become it. And the only way to get out of it is to, you know, do something horrible. But we also wanted to stay very true to classic Grimm's fairy tales where children are eaten. I mean, that's...
right.
And that's, I think, one of the things that people were really afraid of and disturbed by. But that's what I think makes the movie original and interesting.
And he produced the feature film version of that movie, which, again, like talking about a movie called Clown, about a guy who puts on a clown outfit and can't take it off, doesn't sound like much more than a segment in an anthology movie like we just covered.
It does sound terrible when you say it out loud like that.
But the story rounds out really nicely.
Yeah.
Starring Andy Powers, Laura Allen, and Peter Stomare, who I love seeing.
I love seeing him.
Yeah. He was also, I think, is it Before Dawn was the video game? He plays a psychologist in that. I really love that particular role. It's such a basic premise. Expanding to a feature film, I think, like, they should get extra high fives for level of difficulty because the story unfolds nicely. Like, there's a body horror component. There's some gore here and there. There's great stuff in it. And so John Watts is kind of a wunderkind at 35 years old. He directed the Kevin Bacon movie Cop Car. But, you know, the big accomplishment is that this summer we're going to be watching Spider-Man Homecoming. And that's also him.
That's
so he
crazy.
Went from harm, like, in not dissimilar to like Sam Raimi going from like Evil Dead movies and sort of horror. Mm-hmm. To holy shit, he's directing Spider-Man. Here we go. John Watts, rather, is killing it. This was such a good effort.
I really love this. I love the history that they made up for the clown, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I love anything that makes up this history that makes me be like, wait, was that real? Is that is this a lore that I don't know?
These books look very old and these hand-sketched renderings of like ancient clowns, precursors to mimes and all things. Like, yeah, that was cool.
It was really great. My kind of favorite thing, though, is reading through some of these Amazon reviews and the people hate Clown. Am I crazy? Am I on crazy pills?
Maybe people had weird expectations going into it.
I mean, so many people just gave it 1 star and they didn't even give like good funny ones. They just would say like really awful, boring, bad. Like sometimes they'll
None
give
of those
you
things.
Like examples. This is dumb. Don't waste your time. Even if it's available on Prime for free, don't watch it. My boyfriend hates clowns, so I made him watch it thinking he would be scared. We laughed. You're a sadist, though, also. Like, you're the exact same person who should like this movie.
Yeah.
Am I crazy? I think this is great.
No, I thought it was solid. Yeah.
It was fun. There was a lot going on. I didn't think the acting was terrible either.
No.
I can't recommend it enough, and especially after following, you know, a movie that I didn't love so much. It was like a great, yay.
This was on Netflix, right? This is a newcomer to Netflix.
Yeah, streaming. It's on Netflix.
So that'll close us out on a biographical note. You, in addition to recovering from walking pneumonia, you're traveling pretty soon for a week.
I'm going to take my walking pneumonia on a plane.
Oh, good.
Good. Good, good for There's everyone on that plane.
Quarantine too. Yeah, so so next week I haven't figured out what precisely I'll do, but are you looking forward to Las Vegas?
No, I'm this never looking trip? Forward to Las Vegas.
Is there anything you like about the trip?
I like eating all the food.
There are some pretty decent comps dinners, although you are kind of obligated to talk to customers.
You know what, though? I like some of those customers.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I like most of my customers, actually. My customers are pretty cool people, so it's okay. I can handle that. So, yeah, I get to go out, eat dinner with some people. I like that part of it. I mean,
long days on your feet.
Long days on
your
feet.
It's a good thing it's walking pneumonia and not, like, bed rest pneumonia.
Well, then I wouldn't have to go, so I don't know which one's better, Darren. You tell me.
I don't know. Who leaves the hospital and is like, ah, what a perfect vacation? Very few people.
Very few people. Especially, yeah, with my insurance, forget about it.
Come for the lay down. Stay for the food.
So, yeah, I'll be eating a lot of food, taking my captain trips all over the country there, and hopefully everyone enjoys that super flu I'm given.
Oh, boy.
As always, you can find us on social media. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter at Rance Macabre. Please interact with us. Love it. Love to hear from people. Unless you're being a jerk, then I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, we should send some love in the direction of the Save Horror crew. Keith and April, they released a infographic that spoke to horror criticism.
Right. Which actually wasn't the first time they've released this infographic before.
Yeah, and it's been the premise of their website. The Save Horror is not unlike, you know, Save the Tigers or, like, right, wildlife or what have you. The premise is that horror as a sort of mainstream genre has been sort of cast aside and not really... It's not been a thriving genre, but they are going specifically by a critical response.
Right. Because I don't obviously agree with some of that. I think horror is better than ever.
I agree.
But as far as critical response, you're not getting the critiques.
Yeah, I think because it's always been this niche genre, your only, like, major crossovers are more like psychological thrillers or psychological horror. And those, you know, oftentimes movies like The Exorcist were a studio-backed film. And back in those days, like, you could get financing for a big budget horror movie. And these days everything is much more low budget, low scale. Mm-hmm. And that gets, you know, a lot fewer reviewers to comment on them and draw attention. And so it's become a sort of tricky thing. Keith and April love horror movies. That's the whole point. They're fighting for them.
Right.
And they're trying to draw attention to the great ones. And so, I'm in the same boat. I don't agree with every review they put up, but I certainly appreciate where their heart is.
Absolutely.
And they were not coming from a position of criticizing. They were trying to, you know, call attention that, like, mainstream publications and different outlets should always keep in mind that, like, this is a genre that, you know, we saw this year, the movie Get Out is one of the most relevant pieces of film to come out this year. Who gives a shit what genre it's in? It's a good, airtight thriller. Mm-hmm. And so movies like that kind of are always on the forefront, but because people might relegate them to, like, it's horror. I don't watch horror. I don't horror. You get that from so many people. But it's a genre that's fighting and breaking new ground, and there's commentary therein, and there's a long tradition of that, and that's kind of what they're trying to draw attention to.
Right. So it was kind of sad to see them get kind of beat up on Twitter the other day, and then also I think everyone, you know, needs to keep in mind we're horror fans, and so we are kind of like people on the fringes, and we really shouldn't go out of our way to make other people feel on the fringe.
Yeah,
you know,
threatening someone for their mission has never been to bash horror, and so for people to attack them, sort of misconstruing their original intentions is really heartbreaking. And we've been back and forth with them, and so, like, they took it really seriously.
Absolutely. I think, you know, we're all in this horror community together, and we need to not be dicks to each other, right?
Civility, people.
Yeah, I think just don't be a jerk to people who likes the things that you like Why would you do that? I don't know. Anyway, that was Diatribe. So we're on Twitter if you have something to say, I guess. I guess, you know, go ahead and do that. Facebook and Twitter. You can also find us on Patreon at patreon.com/rantsmacabre. We have our website, therantsmacabre.com, where you can stream us, and we have some artwork. There's also a donate button on there if you don't want to do the Patreon route, and you can donate. Anything goes and helps us out.
Yeah, we've got a merch pack there as well. We've got buttons, stickers, and magnets just waiting for you. We'll ship internationally. So that'll close us out. This is me, Darren, signing off.
This is Mindy. Thanks.
The Rants Macabre. Cutting.
Cultured.
And curated.
And curated. And curated. And curated.